Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. What a week we had. I mean, you would have to be me to understand what is going on, not only in the city of Benton Harbor, but around the country. I want to jump in real fast today because I got a couple of guests that one very special guest, Jamie Davis. He is also running for mayor of the city of Benton Harbor, and we're going to give him an opportunity to give his take on how he's going to make the city better. Those of you who are listening, I know that you're going to be sending me emails, and I know that you're going to want to talk about it, but we're going to give him all the support we can to help him, because he seemed like a guy who would do the right thing and not be a sellout. There's nothing in this world worse to me than a sellout, because a sellout destroys the future of our children. But before I get there, I want to read this article by Joseph Perry, a very, very good friend of mine, and also his uncle was one of the greatest men have ever participated in anything. He's a true star. He's a true hero. I love him. Matter of fact, he helped mold me along with General Baker out of Detroit, Michigan. But the story goes like this. Unanimous is not enough. The struggle continues, by Joseph Perry. As the struggle continues on part of a unanimous is not enough movement to free all those wrongfully convicted by the state of Louisiana, Jim Crow law, the 10-2 law, it reminds us of what Arthur William Faulkner once said: the past isn't dead, it isn't even past. Louisiana voters made it clear by a margin of 2-1 that there should be no more non-unanimous jury laws in the state from 2012 moving forward. But unanimous is not enough movement asks us, isn't Jim Crow just as wrong in 2019 as any time in the past? And if so, should not the new law be retroactive to include all these unjustly convicted in the past but still incarcerated? The power that be has answered that this would be damaging to the state economy. So they're more concerned about the economy than it is for human beings. This is in Louisiana, which is so amazing. The power that be has answered this will be damaging to the state economy. It seems justice has no place in a multi-billion-dollar prison industrial that extract profit from the unpaid convict labor. This reality is rooted in a path of slavery and criticism, and we continue to be hunted by them, both because neither has ever have even died. The 10-2 law, originally 9-3, finds its original in 1898, Louisiana Constitutional Convention. And it will read as follows: cases in which the punishment is necessary, hard labor by a jury of 12, 9 of whom render a verdict. The Louisiana State Constitution, Article 116, trial with or without a jury, page 148. At Louisiana 1974 Conventional Convention, it was changed from 9-3 to 10-2 to avoid possible Supreme Court action. Also in 1898, the conviction article 197 was designed to disqualify black people from voting or registering to vote in every conceivable fashion. The convention president said in his closing remarks, "We have not drafted the exact constitution that we should like to have drafted, otherwise we should have inscribed it, universal white manhood." So what he was saying is this: the 10-2 law, all you need is 10 people to convict someone, not 12 people. And you can only have actually two blacks on the jury. And we went to Louisiana, New Orleans, and we fought, and we're going to continue to fight, and we're going to bring justice to all. There's 2,000 guys in prison right today that can't be released. 2,000. But they're concerned about the effect of the economy. Who's going to be working those jobs if we release these 2,000 people? Wow, amazing. But we'll hear from Joseph Perry later on today. He'll be on to talk about it. But even more important, I think everybody should understand how important it is. We thought that slavery has been abolished, but it has not. And Louisiana is alive and well. That's right. You could have went to prison with 10 white votes if you would have had two blacks on there and they voted not guilty. Normally would be classified as a hung jury, but not in Louisiana. Louisiana say if 10 people say you are guilty, you go to prison for the rest of your life without the possibility of a parole, which is so amazing. But people didn't even cry about it. People didn't holler about it. No, nobody really said a mumbling word. Wow. It all started in 2014. You know, that's when we really got wind of it. And in 2018, 64% of all the voters in Louisiana said that this was unconstitutional, that it was another form of slavery. Whites said it too, not just blacks. Whites said it. They went out and voted for this and made a difference. So I salute them today. But let me move on. One of the things that I wrote about in this article for this newspaper called the People Tribune, which goes all over the country, I talked about the cover-up of the contaminated water that's in Benton Harbor, Michigan. The city manager, Darren Watson, and the mayor, Marcus Muhammad, received a letter from the Michigan DEQ. And it simply stated that the water was contaminated and was undrinkable, that you are going to have to fix this matter, or they was going to fine the city of Benton Harbor every single day that the water is poisoning the people over $1,000 a day. Can you imagine in 1 year what that figure would be? We're talking over $365,000. And the mayor did not even take this to the city council. He tried to conceal it. He tried to conceal this information from the people, him and the city manager. He never told them until we got wind of it. One of the commissioners was sent by accident this report. And also we already knew because we was already testing the water and we was already in touch with the Michigan DEQ. But they sent them a letter telling them that the water was undrinkable. That was on October the 3rd. They never reported. What he did, he snuck and signed the consent form without passing it or without voting. The commission, the other eight commissioners, never voted on this resolution. In other words, he actually committed a crime. He actually committed a crime. But here's the thing. When you are supported by Whirlpool Corporation, you can commit crimes and get away with them until they don't need you anymore. That's right. You can commit crimes. There was a young man named Seawood that was there. he committed several crimes. And what happened was, when they didn't need him no more, they said, just butt to jail. He thought that he could do things and get away with it. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But listen, I have a young man who's running for mayor of the city of Benton Harbor. A very knowledgeable young man. A person who's going to move the city to a whole different level. And we're asking for the support of the Pinckney community. Those who listen to my show every Sunday, we're asking for your support to help this young man. But let's go to Mr. Jamie Davis and let him tell us where he at. Jamie Davis, are you there? Talk to me.
I am here, Reverend Pinckney, and I do appreciate this opportunity. Very important. Very special.
Hey, this is, you know, this is the beginning of something really, really sensational. And, you know, I'm excited to have a young man like you on my show, because people can get an idea now of what direction that we're heading in. Because right now, most times, people are going around in circles. They have no idea what is happening, what's going on with them, what's going on in the city. And this is why we're in this compromising position today. And the life is being sucked out of us. See, people don't see it until it's too late. I saw it over 20 years ago, what was happening. People thought I was nuts. I remember when they were getting ready to build a golf course, and people say, well, they're not going to build no golf course. Why would they knock down homes to build a golf course? To me, that was the stupidest thing I ever heard. I say, well, that's why they're building the golf course. Can't you see it? And then when the building, right, when they completed it, the first thing, Jamie, they say was, oh, you're a genius. You knew that. I said, no, it was just common sense. But listen, here's what I want to ask you. When you, okay, you're running for mayor. Tell us what your plans are. How can you help the residents in the city of Benton Harbor? Talk to me about that. And I want people to tune in on this, because we're going to need your support. So talk to us, Jamie. Talk to us right now. Tell us.
Well, I must take this opportunity, first of all, to humbly thank Reverend Pinckney for this show. And Reverend Pinckney, I was in a class on Pinckney day for electricity in Mississauga Fair last year, and I didn't know we'd be having this conversation today. Plus, people had told me about you, Reverend Pinckney, years before, and asked me had I ever got with you, because I was doing a TV show in Chicago, Illinois. And I talked about all types of issues. I talked about the abortion rate in the black community on my show. I had a show in Chicago called The Yards Real Out from about 2008 to about 2015. And had a TV show before then. You know, I've been on television. I came right out of Benton Harbor High School in 1989. And I took the radio and television class there at school. And I was able to go and actually use that. I had no idea I would get a radio show. No, I had no idea I would be on TV, none of that stuff. I just took the class out and ended up using it. It's been very beneficial for me, because I've been able to galvanize an audience, you know, before I came back to the city and started doing work here. And a lot of my work I tried to take to the city of, down to the regular radio, the local radio station here, but I was rejected by one of the people that's actually running the mayor against me now, and that's Ron Singleton. I took all my information to the radio station, and they rejected it. But basically, those things that I took to them would have given the people here, and this was 3-4 years ago, I took my stuff to them. And I've been rejected by the powers that be, and I think it's some of the powers that have got their hands in the money here downtown. Like places like, of course, Whirlpool, Cornerstone Alliance, the Out Center, these places like that. They have taken the whole, like, everything, like, they control everything downtown. And what I'm seeing is I'm walking around talking to people and just seeing what they need. And I'm noticing that I'm seeing people's skin. I've never seen people's skin the way I see it now. And you mentioned the water, and that is one of the major issues that I would have to address, is this water situation. How is it that we're suffering with this water situation, and yet the other cities that surround us that are not, that don't have the demographics that this city has, why are they not suffering from the same water condition to the same extent that we are? I just don't understand or overstand that. So I have to address that strongly. We are supposed to have the right to clean water. Your body is over 70% water. You have to have clean water. It is a right. I don't even see how you're asking people to pay for water, you know, especially when the water is poison. How are you asking people to pay? It's criminal to me. Yeah. You're asking people to pay for water when the water that's coming out of the tap is poison. How do these people sleep? And I just don't understand that. And the administration, to me, is not pressing these people. They're not putting the heat on these people. To me, it has to be a different approach. Because we are, literally, I'm just going to say, to me, it's like 1974's movie Three the Hard Way. In this city, and in the movie Three the Hard Way, you know, they say art imitates life, you see. And they don't pay Hollywood actors millions of dollars just to play roles in movies for no reason. You didn't, we didn't go to school and hear about Shakespeare and Beowulf and all these actors and things like that in the Victorian era for no reason. This is big business with these individuals. Now, they put the movie 1974, Three the Hard Way came out, Richard Roundtree, Jim Kelly, and Jim Brown. And the government, the higher government, decided they were going to poison the water in three major so-called metropolitan or black areas. L.A. was one, Chicago, and Detroit. Now, in reality, Chicago has had bad water. That's not too far from us. They have a very intimate relationship with us here in Big Harbor, Michigan. Then you have, then they hit Detroit. Actually, they hit Flint, see? And, of course, we've had issues we see in L.A. as well with the water situation. That anywhere where our people are living, we're having issues with the water and even with the black administration that sit there. Well, I'm looking, I cannot believe that you have individuals here who are working in City Hall who drive past Progressive Baptist Church. Progressive Baptist Church has been having meetings there every day for Narcotics Anonymous. You have indigenous people in this city, indigenous males, brothers, who have many skills to do all types of carpentry, welders, you know, these bricklayers. You got men who went to school way before the crack era. When the crack era came in the 80s, they were hit. And they're still recovering from it. I mean, I had people walking up to me asking me yesterday to lay my hands on them and pray for them. It's like the indigenous men here are suffering. They want to work. It's this image that's been given. See, with my radio and TV experience, I know media, and I know how the media portrays our people, and that has to change. We need public access television here again so that the youth can get involved, see, as well as the other individuals who are older, like myself, can get involved, and we can talk about real issues, and we can press these folks, you see. Public access in the media, what you're doing right now is very important. We need to have that because I'm looking at indigenous men out here who are suffering, telling me, listen, they don't understand why the roads are the way they are. Everybody's complaining about the roads. Everybody here is complaining about the roads, falling in potholes and things of this nature. I'm just saying that we need a mayor, a man, or a council. I will push the entire council to get out and to walk your ward. There's no reason for us to be having to wait until May 11th and 12th to clean up. Why can't why can we not use the people that's already there to walk their wards and make sure that we are connecting with the people living in these houses? They say nobody's coming around. They don't see the commissioners and stuff like that walking the street. They don't come to their doors and knock on the doors. Like I said, they drive past Progressive Church, and it's Narcotics Anonymous. I heard black men in there talking about how they've been recovered for 15 and 20 years, and they've been trying to get a building so that they can go for the young people. So the younger people in the city who are also on drugs and narcotics, they don't have a place to go. They're not comfortable in certain settings, but they will come in the hood where the people are starving. Boy, I mean, just somebody to just say, I didn't care. This is show you care. I got people telling me they'll put my sign up. I don't even know these people. I'm just running around talking to them. These brothers are thirsty for sisters, for somebody to come and show concern. And we don't have them. All the people that we got in sitting in city council, city hall right now, evidently they are not testing the hearts of the people. And that's why you don't have the youth involved. I went and contacted the principal. I talked to the principal. I want the principal to get any young youth that's 18 years old, 17, 18, whatever, that are thinking about government in any type of way to come to the meeting. I want to bring the youth to the meetings, give them an opportunity. If they don't want to come to the meeting, I'll take the meeting to them. I'll go into the hood, and I'll have open forum with microphone. I'm a musician. I can take my guitar, and I'm serious. This is what the kind of campaign I want to run. The type of campaign of officially a men, you know, a person who really goes out of here and talks to the people and sees what the people need. Once you get everything, you got to do it every house. You need to go to every house. It's only 4.4 miles square. I'm going to go to every house I can, knock on every door I can, and talk to every person that I can and get all their complaints. Then put the majority of the complaints that are the same. I'm basically saying what I'm doing anyway. I guess what I'm supposed to be doing. I'll put them all together, and at the end of the week, these things have to be addressed. You don't wait until election time to fix the roads. That's white. That's European politics. This is what we've been getting for so long, European-style politics. You do things as right around election time so you look good. But see, there's one thing with the fixing of the roads. If you're fixing the roads now, finally you want to fix the roads now. But look at all the damage that's been done with the roads being the way they've been for so long. You got people that have torn up their car. There's no compensation. So when you tear up your car, you can't get to work. They say you don't want to work. We lazy. We no good. We don't do nothing. But when you have a decent job and the city will not use the money allocated to fix the roads, they're using it for something else. Now you're getting potholes all over the place and you're tearing up your vehicles. How are you going to get to work?
Let me say this.
You take care of your family?
Let me say this. You know, the money that they are using right now to fix the curves and the side and part of the sidewalk, that was money that was allocated for our children to have summer jobs. You see, and instead of giving our children a summer job, this mayor and this city manager, they decided to hold that money until this time of the year, so it can look like they're doing something. And you hit the nail right on the head. Don't use our children. Don't use our children to try to make yourself look good because you have been looking bad for the last 3.5 years. Now all of a sudden you want to fix the curb, but you're fixing the curb down close to Main Street where Whirlpool is at and also City Hall. They might be fishing it somewhere else, but I have not seen that. And it don't mean it's not happening. Don't get me wrong, Jamie. But that's what I have. That money was allocated for our children, for the youth to have summer jobs last year, and not one person got a summer job that I know of. And they supposed to put over 75 to 100 people of our young children to work. And it didn't happen. And see, when you use politics the way you use them, it's amazing. Look at the roads. When you look at the roads that's in the city of Benton, Benton Street, down the street, Union Street, in the Benton Harbor area, it's horrible. You can't even walk down in the middle of the street. without, you know, turning your ankle or something. And I'm so glad that you made that known. But here's the thing that I'm going to have to tell you. You are going to, like you said, you're going dough to dough. And have a pad with you and write down a name and address and phone mm-hmm. number. And get their concern. What are you concerned about? Are you concerned about the school system? Are you concerned about the future of our city? Tell us, you know, because before you came here, Jamie, they had sold this city out. That golf course that I was talking about earlier, you know, they sat down and they signed the lease for 100 years. That's Ooh. All your that's your grandchildren, your grandchildren, and it goes on and on and on, and it's only peanuts. But what they got underneath the table, we don't know. We know that they got wow. something. So you got yourself. They're gonna have a debate, and it's gonna come in July.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're gonna have to be ready for them. Marcus Muhammad, he's gonna have Whirlpool is gonna be giving him a lot of money. And when I say a lot of money, he wants the same treatment that Hightower got. He got the TV on ESPN. He had a commercial on there. He had a big billboard. He had all nothing but signs. He had so many signs that it was almost ridiculous, you know. But the point is, it's name recognition when you have those signs. People see your name and they get excited, you know, because they thought that when Marcus became the mayor, that he would make a major change for the people, because that's all he talked about, what he's going to do for the people. I'm going to do this. I won't be like Hightower. I'm not and got in and he is Hightower on steroids. That's what he is. And it's unfortunate, but that's why you know your fresh voice. I believe that you will stand up and not allow them to do the things you do. And you got some folks that'll back you up too. That which is really the good part. You got some folks who's going to support you. So you know just get yourself ready and take this thing to a whole different level. And, you know, and just deal with it. You know, you got to get out of here. You know, you can't sit at home because yesterday they had the parade. The mayor was sitting in, what's his name, Jerry Hunt car doing the parade. You know, he was too big for it. He was too big for that car. He was literally... I thought he was going to fall, man. I thought he was going to fall back. And look, and don't say it, Jamie. I was not hoping he'd fall. I was not hoping he'd fall. I was not sitting at home praying that he'd fall off the back of the car or something like that. I was not doing that.
Right.
He looked like he was just too big for the car. And but that's what it is. But here's something that you're going to have to deal with. You're going to have to deal with a city council when you come in as the mayor. At first, I could see them really being on your side if you win this election. I could see them joining you because I know you have ideas, and I know you care about the youth. And I know what you do. I know what you're interested in. But those are going to be where you are going to have to. That's where you, if you're going to win, you're going to win because you're going to have the youth at your side. And that's what you have to get into. Tell me, when we talk about the water and stuff like that, we understand that, you know, the water is bad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the present mayor, him and the city manager, they tried to conceal it rather than letting people know that the water is bad. You know, to me, it's a no-brainer. I mean, if the water is bad, tell the people the water is bad. And they have the choice whether they're going to drink it or not.
Right.
But it's unfair that you have to pay for that. I don't know how you would deal with that. You know, if the water is undrinkable, how do you, you know, what do you do? You know, do you still have to pay for the water? You know, and really, you should.
I just can't see that. I just cannot see that. I just don't see any compromise on that. How do you just? I think that this just needs to be no. But sometimes you just have to say no, no, just go. No, just go. I'm not going to do that. Sometimes you just have to say no. And if they say, well, you know, so when you go to the bargaining table, that's what you do. You bargain. If you don't get the bargain you want, then you get up from the bargaining table and you leave.
Right.
That's what you sometimes have to do. And then you have to tell yourself, you have to do what you have to do on your own. I don't even understand trying to get people who may have something to do with poisoning the water and help you fix it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that we need to look into the genome, and that's just been where the scientists have created where you can be in a multicultural area, city or village, town, or whatever state, whatever. Let's say there's Asian, there's European, and there are so-called black or indigenous people. If they wanted to poison just the European, they could poison just Europeans with what they call the genome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't even talk about that. This is something that could be placed in your water system anywhere. And these are the facts. We have to understand that we're living under a government that wrote the COINTEL program. They never got rid of that program. The rise of the Black Messiah is something that they don't ever want to see. And this is why, this is my website, rotbm.nationbuilder.com. And that's Rise of the Black Messiah. It's government issue. I'm going to use government document. It's government issue. This is the time for the people, the so-called Bible, the chosen ones, the 400-year captivity is up in August. This is the same year, the same time that the first primary election for this city is in August. This is the time when we're supposed to be that prophecy of Genesis, the 15th chapter, is supposed to take place this year. So we're supposed to be the free people. And this is what I wanted. This is the message I'm trying to bring to us. We're supposed to be a free people, period. I mean, totally and completely free. We need no one else to govern us. We are in every position all over the place. Why do we continuously need someone else to govern us? And we already have a black administration here in this city. Why can't we do things for ourselves? We don't need to continue. It's not about being racist. This is not racism, period. This is a product of racism. We've been dealing with systemic racism all over the place. This is a product of that. And you have to be, they say radical. I just say, you know, we have to just have a non-compromising attitude towards certain things.
When our children's
future, yes. When our children's future is at stake, I mean, you have to make drastic change. Let me tell you what I once saw. One time, I was over doing some business in the city. I've been in the military. I spent 4 years in the military. So when I see things, I don't know if I see things like everybody else that may not have been in the military. I see things, I see deeper into a situation. I saw a young brother get, he got out of a vehicle, and the vehicle pulls off, and next thing you know, two white guys pull up in another vehicle, beat up vehicle. This young brother goes to their vehicle, and some type of exchange was made. They pull off, then the vehicle that dropped the little brother off turned around the corner and picked him up. So you have people in this city who are adults. These men, I saw like they was in their 40s, 50s. This was a young brother, no more than maybe about 19, 20, maybe even younger than that. I don't know what was being passed, whether he was given something or he was receiving something. But what I'm saying is there are people other than us who are in this city involved in the demise of our children. You got dope out here now. Our children are taking. We didn't even hear of when I was young. Our children weren't on no meth. These children today, our children now are on meth too. When I went to this drug prevention center at the church, at a progressive church.
Mm-hmm.
I could not believe that so many of our people, and even there was a young person in there, a young guy. These young men are hurting out here. These young guys are on dope too, and there's no intervention there for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurt my heart. I've been dealing with this for the last all week long. I've been meeting people outside of cameras and stuff like that, and just talking to people and getting the feel of people. Youth out here hurting. They out here hurting for real. We have a homeless problem in the city. For homeless youth, why is there all these houses being torn down? Why can't we get couple of these houses, fix these houses up, and these youth can go in some of these houses? I just don't get this. I don't get what's going on with a black administration. These men and women, some of them have college education. I don't see college education work down there. Mm. You got college-educated people down there. You have one brother that was on the police force. Okay, so that's another element right there. You have elements, other people that are doing other. You got a preacher on the panel, a minister on the panel. So that's a spiritual aspect. You got enough people there to get something done for our people, but something ain't getting done. And I just don't quite get that. And somebody asked me, I talked to George Moon, and he asked me, what makes you think you should be elected when you have no experience? And I'm like, well, the current mayor was a commissioner before he became the mayor, so he had all that experience. Then he became the mayor, so he has all this experience now. And look at the city. Evidently, it doesn't make a difference if you have experience or not. Look at the city under a mayor who has been a commissioner and now the mayor. How do you go to sleep at night and not tell people that the water is bad the day you hear it? I talked to Izzy from Freshwater Future. She told me out of her own mouth that Derwin, which is the city manager, neither the mayor contacted her when she left numerous messages about the water. She told me this about a month ago. Yeah. How do you sleep at night? You claim you're here for the city of Benton Harbor. You're there with the gavel, and you call order, point order, and point order. You're quick to hit that gavel down there. But our people are trying to hurt out here for the water. I'm seeing people's skin now. I'm seeing people scratching and the skin turning a dark grayish color that I've never seen in my life. I've seen two people like this now in two different areas in the last week. And I know it's got something to do with this water. How do you lay down at night with a beautiful family every night? And you didn't tell us that the water was bad, but you want to be the mayor again? See, this is the thing. This is the madness behind people that even push folks like that. The people that are pushing the mayor to be the mayor again evidently have no good for us in their mind. Because knowing he's not done the things for us, that's why they want him in there. This is one reason why we got to come to these city hall meetings. I'm going to get as many people. Believe me, you start seeing more faces at the city hall meetings because I'm getting people that are ready. I got people that want to be walk-in candidates. I would love to go in and shake the whole administration up, because you cannot sit down here while our children are being kidnapped. That's another thing. Indigenous children in Michigan itself, Michigan is number one for trafficking. This is number one state for trafficking. I don't understand why I'm looking at all these trafficking signs at the library, at these hotels around here, but I'm not hearing that as an issue at the city council meeting. It's going to be one now because I'm going to be bringing it up. I'm letting you know now.
Nothing, Jamie. They don't bring up nothing. They don't even know how to bring jobs into the community. They don't know how to do anything other than sit up there and be dictated to by Whirlpool. So that's the whole thing, Jamie. And what you're saying is so important, because our children is at risk.
Yes.
You're going to be the only man that's going to be talking about our children. You're the only
one. Yeah, exactly. Now, how is that when the mayor has how many children? I don't even want to say that. He has over four, I think. So how can that be? How can children not be the front of the first things on your tongue? How can children not be one of the first things on your tongue? How can children not be one of the first words coming out of your mouth when you address these individuals around us that's controlling our lives, when you have several children and stuff? That doesn't make any sense. And I'm going to tell you this, it doesn't make sense that we have a police station that's fully functional and men have to leave and young females go over across the river, right? Why can't they stay here in Benton Harbor? Why can't we go down there and talk to our own children? These are our children, okay? Mm-hmm. Our nephews, our nieces. How do we send our children across the river and pay them $400, $500, $600, $700, $800, $900 all the time? How do we continue to keep doing this and the council system allows that? Our children go across the river and they die sometimes over there.
Yeah.
They're killed. Sometimes they come back floating in the waters. And you mean to tell me that our children is not on the forefront with these officials? That doesn't make no sense to me. They got nephews. They got little nieces. They got little brothers and little cousins. Why are they not talking about our youth? Why are they not saying, I am karate? I am.
Yeah.
I am karate. I am karate. Why aren't they saying that?
Absolutely. Well, listen, you got 3 minutes. And I want you to tell us, I know that you do you have a web page where people can donate money?
I have a web page, and the donate button will be up probably tomorrow around this time. And it's rotbm.nationbuilder.com. Again, that's ROTBM for Rise of the Black Messiah or Rise of the Black Man, either way you want to look at it. Dot.
NationBuilder.com.
Yes.com.
I'm going to send out an email to all my listeners.
Okay.
And get that. I'm gonna get that. Make sure I have it correctly. We'll talk later on.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we'll know, because running for mayor of the city of Benton Harbor, you are going to need money. You can't without money. You're fighting an uphill battle. And
yes, I know.
But here's the thing: you got to be willing to get out there and go door to door.
Yes.
In the neighborhood that you live in, that is a crucial section.
Yes.
You are going to have to get out there and beat the door, and don't forget to go with your pad so people know that you're serious. And tell them what is. Here's another thing that you're going to have to do too. A lot of times people don't know that there's concern. A lot of times people don't even know there's a problem with the high school. They don't even know that there's a problem with city government. You have to tell them, because they got us so confused that a lot of people don't even know which way is up. So you are going to have to get out there and be a force for the people. But listen, I really appreciate you coming on. I want you to hang on. And I got my good friend Joe Perry. He's on the line. He's going to be talking about unanimous is not enough. If this is really big, I read the article that he wrote earlier. He's a guy who's known. He's from the city of Chicago, and I think this is so important. And this is what you got to get tuned into. You know, you're just not going to be a local. We're gonna make sure that you're known all over the state of Michigan, all over the country. We're going to make sure that you are known by the people, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that we promote you. And on that term, I want you to hang on. Don't leave us. Listen to our guests. And also, I want you to remember what you got to do tomorrow. So when you go in tomorrow, and make sure you get there early.
I will.
Okay.
I will. I appreciate it, Reverend.
All right. Well, I got you, buddy. You just take care of your business. That's all you need to do. Take care of your business.
I will.
You got me forever.
I will.
All right. That's my good friend. He's running for mayor of Benton Harbor, a guy with ideas, a tremendous guy. He don't have the finance that, you know, but let's do what we can to make sure he do. But I want to bring in my good friend Joe Perry. He's from Chicago, a tremendous guy, world renowned. There's a lot that he knows. He's just a tremendous person. But the news is his uncle is a lot more famous than him. But he don't mind me saying that because this guy right here is the way it should be. Joseph Perry, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Reverend.
How you feeling today?
Feeling great. I want to thank you for having me on your show.
Well, you know, it's an honor and a privilege to have a man of your character on the Pinckney show. You know, we don't get guys like you on the show too often, but I really, really appreciate you. And I just want to know, I read the article that you have written in the People Tribune, and you normally write very, very well-educated articles. And I think, and I love the cartoon that's on there, Slave State, you know, and thinking about it. But I want to let you talk. We don't have a whole lot of time, but I want, and I know you don't because you're in a meeting yourself. But I want to talk about this because we have not spoke about the 10-2. Unanimous is not enough movement in maybe a couple of weeks, but I want you to tell us what you want us to know. Tell us how it started. Go all the way back through the history and give us a quick history on it.
What? Okay, yeah. It started actually when I got a call from Belinda Parker Brown that she wanted to do an article, on 10-2. And so, you know, I'm one of these folks, I don't like to just write an article, you know, just say anything you want to say. So I started doing research. And when I started doing the research, that's how I found out, you know, these things that you're talking about. And so all I did was just go on Google, 10-2, and then I found out it used to be 9-3. And all it is it means that if you're arrested in the state of Louisiana, then, and this is as of 1898, this is where it had its origins at, 1898, it's a Jim Crow law. If you were arrested, that, you know, they had to give you a 12 jury panel if you're arrested for a felony. But guess what? Only 9 of those jurors were necessary to lock you up, right? I was like, whoa, that's harsh. And then they were afraid in 1974, they had another Louisiana State Constitutional Convention where they were afraid that the Supreme Court might come in and challenge that. You know, it was right after civil rights and that. So they changed it from 9-3 to 10-2, which means, you know, 10 people, let's be real about it. Basically, they were arresting a large amount of black men, not exclusively black men, but mostly black men, and they're basically giving them an all-white jury. But guess what? An all-white jury didn't mean 12 jurors. It meant 10 jurors instead of 12, so it was easier for them. And then you find out that in most cases, they were just threatening people with this all-white jury. We're going to get all-white jurors. Cops tell people that. That's the word coming out of the cop's mouth. We'll get you an all-white jury, and guess what? We only need 10. It's 10-2. We don't need all 12. So even if there's 2 blacks on the jury, it might be in your favor. So it's a completely racial thing from straight out of Jim Crow. Okay, so I started to go back even further, and I traced this thing all the way back to the 13th Amendment. And what really struck me right away, I'm so happy I got involved in it. And so I remember being a kid in high school, and the teacher telling us, oh, the 13th Amendment ended slavery. I went and read the 13th Amendment again, and guess what? I found out that the 13th Amendment did not end slavery, and it says it didn't end slavery. It says, and I quote, that slavery and involuntary servitude are abolished except in cases where you've been convicted of a crime in a court of law. And therefore, slavery is okay. So what's the consequences of this? The consequences are that you have slavery. It used to be a black thing, right? African thing. And the Africans are slaves. Okay, you have a civil war where now all of that is ended in terms of the plantation owners, right? They're no longer. And 1865, they write this 13th Amendment, and what the 13th Amendment does is it makes slavery not a Southern thing, but a nationwide thing. And the other problem that they had is that blacks weren't criminals at all. The only crime you could do as a black person prior to them passing the 13th Amendment is run away from your slave master, and then you're a criminal. They track you down and just send you back your slave master. Okay, but now that's not the case, right? They had to, if being a slave meant you had to be a criminal, now all of a sudden they got a criminalized black, and they spent 150 years on precisely that, criminalizing the black population. And here's the sneaky part about it. Most people don't know that slavery is connected to this, and most people don't realize that the slavery in the penitentiary is everybody of any and all colors, but it's all based on criminalizing the black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, based on criminalizing that black person, everybody is subject to be a slave in America. All you got to do is be arrested and wrongly convicted and sent to jail. And that's why that's the logic behind this 10-2 law. And then the other aspect of this is that you got, man, 50 or more corporations doing business inside these penitentiaries, you know, under the guise that they're keeping you a skill you can use on the outside. But guess what? You learn the skill. You go out, you get out of jail. You go try to get a job. They look at it, oh, you learned the skill in prison. It's you. We ain't giving you no job. Get the hell out of here. Now, all of a sudden, you do something, it gets you back, or maybe you haven't done anything. You just get arrested and get sent to jail, and you're innocent. But guess what? It becomes a situation where the jail is the only place they're going to exploit you at and make millions and millions of dollars off you. There's like 2 million-plus people locked up in the jail system. And a lot of people don't realize that there's another maybe 10 million people out there who have gone through the system who simply don't have the right to vote. Mm. And so it's the same thing perpetuated on it. You're talking about possibly 12 million people. And America is the most incarcerated place in the entire world, right? Take black folks. Black folks are only 5%, I'm sorry, 0.5% of the population of the world. Mm. But black folks are 9% of the world population that's locked up in jail. That's huge.
Mm.
That's huge.
That is.
You take a
that's
state
amazing.
Like Iowa. Take a state like Iowa. Iowa is a state where it's like 3% black people. I'm sorry, Iowa. 3% of the people that live there are black. How come 39% of the people locked up is African American?
Mm.
Whoa.
Yeah.
There's something going on here. It's about money. It's about profit. It's about these corporations like McDonald's, Burger King, Victoria's Secret, United Airlines, all these different corporations are making money hand over fist in this jail system, in this penitentiary system. And here's the killer part. You know, the old slave masters of old on the plantation used to say, I don't know why you guys are all over us. You know, we do pay our slaves. You know, we clothe them, we feed them, we house them. You know, and that's paying them, you know. Okay, all right, you want to make a funny argument like that. All right, fine. But guess what? These new slave masters, guess who's paying for the food, clothing, and shelter of the new slave master? It's us, the taxpayer. We pay. They ain't putting nothing. You can be a corporation that can go behind the bars. You're going to make millions and billions of dollars behind it. It is and guess what? Now it's got nothing to do with crime and punishment. It's got everything to do with profit. That's the hidden part.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question, Joe. I know, like, the NAN 3, and when they talk about 10-2, now, most likely it would be 10 whites. You know, it wouldn't be NAN whites and 3 blacks. It wouldn't be 8 whites and 4 blacks. Most likely it would be 10 white folks. And they always expect white people to find black people guilty, whether they did the crime or not. And I think this is where, when I was in prison, I think they had, at Marquette, the guys that were serving big time, they had a factory over there that they make jeans and stuff for Levi and stuff like that. And And them guys, they were fighting to get these jobs, you know. And it paid them $2 because they, you know, $2 a day. And it appears to them it was a lot of money because when you're in prison, you don't, if you ain't got nobody sending you no money, it's a problem. But I can see the issue with this and how it affects the people in the public. It is another form of slavery.
Absolutely.
And
they got there have been prisoners who have taken have gone to court, you know, saying, look, man, you cannot force me to work. I'm challenging them. And it ends up that the government's argument is you're a slave. Go read the 13th Amendment. You're a slave. The other aspect of this is that you would be surprised that 90-something percent of the people who are getting locked up, right, are threatened with this thing of 10-2. It really actually they don't go to trial. They plea bargain before that, right? So it's nothing but a threat. It's a threat to get you in there for a certain amount of time. And then you get out on the street and you can't get no job. And then you get locked. It turns out the only job they got for you is the slave job in the penitentiary. They're on a job out here on the street. Because those same jobs they're doing, you know, the work that is taking place behind the bars for these corporations, those are jobs Americans could have.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, one of the things that when I think about that 10-2 law, and I think about the people that's still inside in prison, and I think that we are going to have to do something really challenging for them to lose. I remember when the juvenile lifers they were requesting that they be released, and here's the deal: they said it would affect the economy if they released all the juveniles that was convicted.
Right.
And now what they're doing, they're dragging their toenails, they're releasing them, and you know maybe four at a time, over the years. Like here in Benton Harbor, we had about 22 guys that were juvenile lifers here just alone, and four or five of them had came home. But it's so many, it's all over the state of Michigan. They're not letting these kids out, you know, and they're letting them out when they get ready. So that
right.
has been a challenge. Yeah, absolutely. But
so you gotta ask the question, what good is an economy where it has to depend on slavery in order to make it? It sounds to me like that's an economy ought to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's got
mm-hmm.
no business being in existence.
And,
you know, first they
go and
tell the whole world, you tell the whole world we're the freest place on earth, but behind the scenes you're doing slavery. And then when us, the slaves, want to challenge that, all of a sudden we're told, oh, no, you can't do that. Our economy depends on you being a slave. Come on.
Right. Not caring about human rights or anything. But right. here's what I like to say. And I like to say that, you know, we got to keep this, you know, keep this pressure on them. I know when we was down in New Orleans and we was rallying at that courthouse, one of the things that really got my attention, they never had that done before, you know. They never mm-hmm. had anything like that done before. And I'm talking
right.
about over the years, you talking about it's 1898 or 1889. When this law first came into effect, they never talked about it. But listen, you got a minute to say, tell us what you want to know, want us to know, and you're going to take us off the air. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I mean, look, this thing is interconnected to all kinds of things, and one of them is voter suppression. Because it goes back again to the 1898 Louisiana State Convention, where the guy who was the president of the convention, this is his closing statement, and I'm going to paraphrase. He basically said, well, we didn't get the everything we wanted out of this convention and out of the laws that we passed. It was basically two laws. One of them was the 9-3 law, and the other one had to do with suppressing voting to make sure that blacks couldn't vote at all. Now, that's what mm-hmm. they did in that 1898 convention. And what he stated was that if we would have got everything that we wanted to get out of this convention, then we would have guaranteed universal white manhood voting, right, and the suppression of anybody with even a drop of African blood in their veins. Now, that's a quote from that guy. And how that law survived the civil rights movement all the way to this day, I have no idea. But you put those two things together, the 13th Amendment and that 9-3 was later became the 10-2 law, and that it explains voter suppression in that state. It explains everything. It explains that they are literally keeping power. They are keeping power in that state politically and economically in order to have a slave system in place that makes them millions and billions of dollars to corporations. That's
absolutely
what they're doing, and that's going on right now today.
Absolutely.
And they're embarrassed about it. They're embarrassed about it because they won't admit it. They just when it comes out, they just don't say anything about it. That's what's going on. And our job, Rev, to expose it. That's the job of us Americans.
Absolutely. And that's the game plan right there. But listen, we don't have any more time. And I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this because people need to know. You know, we're not just local. You know, we're national. We're international. And I know all the people that listen. I know you're gonna be sending me all kind of emails, and I appreciate it. Good ones and bad ones. Don't hesitate. Send them all to me. We just have to do what we have to do. Also, my good friend Jamie Davis, he's running for mayor here in the city of Benton Harbor. Those of you out there, go to his website. If you email me, I will send you the website so you can look him up, know what he's all about. But on that note, I must say, next week, same time, same station. Have a good week.